All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rinkwide Vancouver.
We saw signs of it on Saturday when the Vancouver Canucks lost their composure and had trouble killing penalties against the Winnipeg Jets, but this was something else entirely as the Canucks flushed a 5-2 lead late in the second period, watched the Minnesota Wild convert power play after power play, and it all added up to a 10-7 Wild victory. It was wild indeed. This is Rinkwide Vancouver. We're coming to you remotely on this Family Day holiday. Usually, we're in our studio in the lower lobby of the Wall Center Hotel, centrally located in the heart of it all, sports games, theaters, restaurants, shopping, English Bay, Stanley Park. It's all just a short walk away, so whether you have people in from out of town or you're considering a staycation for yourself, make sure it includes the Wall Center Hotel. Jeff Patterson joined by Irfan Ghaffar. And Irf, we've said this before. Oh, we've got lots to talk about. We've got lots to talk about. I don't know. I've been at this a while. I know you've covered this team for a long time as well. I can't recall a third period like this one where the Canucks give up 7 goals, all the 5 on threes. 3 guys get hat-tricks in this hockey game, and JT Miller's an afterthought because the Minnesota Wild go to town and defeat the Canucks double digits. 10-7, the final score.
Yeah, we complained about day games being so boring with this hockey team, but this one had a little bit of everything. You mentioned it, the 3 hat tricks. You know, we're going to talk about Casey DeSmith, the 7 goals given up by the Vancouver Canucks in the third period, the 17 goals scored in total in the hockey game. Wild, yes, and not just for the Minnesota team, but what a game. So much to dive into. I'm pumped for it, Jeff. Let's definitely get right after it.
Well, we saw some cracks in the penalty kill on Saturday against the Jets. It was the first time the Canucks had given up 2 power play goals in a game since before Christmas, and that was nothing, because Minnesota ends up going 4-for-6 with the man advantage, so the Canucks have given up 6 power play goals now in their last 2 games. They lose back-to-back outright in regulation. That hasn't happened in a long time. And another game where they had a lead. I mean, they were up 5-2. They were on easy street, and it looked like they were going to get out of the second period with a 5-2 lead, but that's when the wheels started to come off. Late penalties, Nikita Zadorov and then Teddy Bluger, that put the Canucks 2 men down. And 5-on-3s, I mean, they happen, but they don't happen with the frequency with which they did in this game. It started early. The Canucks had to kill off 1:27 of 5-on-3, and they got through that in the first period. And you thought, okay, you know, they avoided some trouble here, but the trouble would follow, and really, it would catch up to the Canucks in that third period. Again, it was mind-boggling. Like, it was hard to catch your breath. I can only imagine what it was like for the players on the ice, Rick Tocchet behind the bench. you know, Minnesota pulls the, or like switches goaltenders, Philip Gustafson out after two periods, essentially putting the flower in there for mop-up duty. I mean, they're hoping that they get a little bit of a bump from the goalie change, but really the goalie didn't have anything to do with it. At least the Minnesota goalie didn't. It was all the power play. Joel Eriksson-Ek with 3 goals and 3 assists. Kaprizov caps his hat trick into the empty net at the end. So he also has 3 and 3. Matt Boldy had 1 and 3 on the afternoon. So their big guns were there. We talked about JT Miller. He had the hat trick. He also had an assist. So a 4-point afternoon for JT Miller. But ultimately, when you look at this, I mean, 7 on the road, 7 wherever. I don't care if you're playing on the moon. 7 should be enough to win, not leave you 3 goals shy. But I mean, really, this is a story of Canucks discipline, penalties, and just an inability to kill penalties. And your goalie has to be your best penalty killer. And Casey DeSmith wasn't. I'm not pinning it on him, but he's got 1 win since Christmas, Irf. And this is becoming a story now, in as much as they're going to need him to play some games to give Thatcher Demko days off down the stretch here. There's still a lot of hockey to be played, but he was such a good story early in the season. And now the struggles are apparent. Again, I don't want to pin this entirely on your backup goalie, but they gave him a 5-2 lead to work with. Like, lock it down, make some stops. And that just didn't happen for Casey DeSmith, who, again, 1 win in 6 starts since Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, look, this, again, I'm not going to put this one totally on DeSmith. Make some saves. Yes, you do need to stop a couple. I mean, some of the bounces obviously weren't going their way, but you win as a team and you do lose as a team, I think, in my opinion as well, Jeff. So when you look at it, you know, up 5-2 going into the third period, like this team should be able, or sorry, up 5-3 going into the third period, this team should be able to close hockey games if they have Stanley Cup aspirations. I know it's, you know, a game in February and it's an afternoon game on a holiday in the States and things like that, but these are the type of games where, you know, you're going to look back and say, if things start to fall off here a little bit for this team, you know, here's one of the reasons why. But yeah, the penalty kill wasn't good. You mentioned 4 for 6. That's not good. You know, other teams looking at this team say, well, let's just keep moving our feet. Let's get power plays. This team can't stop us if we're on the power play. And, you know, obviously the Minnesota Wild were doing that. We're making the Canucks take penalties, but bad penalties too. Like penalties that they didn't need to take, just dumb, silly mistakes. And, you know, the head coach mentioned it. They needed to stay more disciplined, and the lack thereof definitely did show that in this hockey game.
Well, and that's one of the things for me, because that was one of the comments from Rick Tocchet the other night. Didn't want to let his team off the hook against Winnipeg. And I know officiating was front and center on Saturday night, and people here are going to look at all the 5-on-3s for the Wild and say, maybe the Canucks stirred the pot here, that it was different guys wearing stripes, but they're all part of the brotherhood. And, you know, if you call out the officials, you're going to pay. But really, when I look at the penalties in this hockey game, Connor Garland gets called for high sticking early, and then Noah Juulsen takes Zuccarello off, matching unsportsmanlike conduct penalties at the same time, even before the faceoff on the first penalty kill. But then Elias Lindholm, that was the one, I guess, when, like, you're already down a man, and Elias Lindholm, as the puck is cleared and going down the ice, and he takes a bit of a shot at Joel Eriksson-Ek, but there has to be some leeway there. So I had some issues there, but again, they killed that part off. So that didn't come back to bite them, but Zadorov gets called for holding late in the second period. Teddy Bluger gets the high sticking call. Elias Pettersson on that wild scramble in the dying seconds of the second period. And then JT Miller puck over the glass. I mean, that one's black and white. There's nothing that you can do about it. He flipped the puck out of, you know, under pressure, out of play. And so a lot of this was the Canucks' own undoing. And just the words of the coach that, you know, they've got to cut down on the penalties that they're taking. And 4 minutes into this hockey game, 3 guys are already in the penalty box. Like, so maybe we got an indication of what was to come later in this game. But ultimately, like, I don't care if you think you're playing two teams, like Tyler Meyer said the other night. The adversity comes at you in all sorts of forms and fashions, and it's going to down the stretch, and it certainly is into the playoffs. And penalty kill had been a strength of this group. Like, since Christmas, they had been one of the top 5 teams in the National Hockey League on the penalty kill, but the bottom has completely fallen out here, and it has to be more than just the fact that Dakota Joshua is out of the lineup. Like, he would help. There's no doubt. I mean, he's become one of their best penalty killers, but, you know, again, they've been so fortunate on the injury front that one guy coming out, just, it's a house of cards. Come on, I'm not buying that at all. But the guys that are asked to do the job, they got to suck it up. And yeah, I mean, a massive fail on the part of the penalty killers across the board for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at it, there's obviously going to go back to the drawing board here and figure out what coverages were blown, things like that. I get the deflections, but I don't like the JT Miller putting the puck over the glass. You know, that just can't happen. And I get it. There are mental errors and things like that. And the puck maybe bounced or something like that. But there was more than enough times for this Canucks team to be able to close this hockey game out and not take penalties. But when you do, you should be able to bail your goalie out. But it's just, it was lapses in judgment. It was maybe the morning start. I mean, they've played a few of the games in the morning, Jeff. Like, I don't really know, but yeah.
Morning start didn't seem to bother them at 5-2, Irf.
Like. No, you're right. But I think it's one of those things, right? You're grasping at looking for things. But look, I tweeted, I don't think Stanley Cup contending teams give up 7 goals in the third period. I just don't. That's a tough look for the Vancouver Canucks. I get it. It was your backup goalie in net, but this is a team effort. You do it collectively, and they clearly are going to be feeling the criticism after this one.
Yeah, and look, it doesn't get any easier. Back-to-backs into Denver against Colorado Avalanche. You have the best home ice record in the National Hockey League, and I think that's where Rick Tocchet's hands were tied. I think in different circumstances, he might have had the hook out and put Thatcher Demko in there just to give the team a different look. We talked about the Minnesota switching goaltenders, but you've got Demko, you're saving him for the Avalanche, and you know that's going to be a busy workload for the Canucks at the back end of back-to-backs and at altitude and everything else. And so this was Casey DeSmith's game start to finish. And again, like I want to move past Casey DeSmith. It wasn't all on him, but where he was such a good news story in the first 10 starts of the year, and again, the team has to play better in front of them. There's no question, but this is the NHL and you do need some stops. I mean, Minnesota scores 10 goals on 17 shots, or 27 shots rather, now the last couple into an empty net. So they weren't all scored against Casey DeSmith, but still 8 get past the Canucks. Netminder, that is a few too many. And you just look like I ran out of space on my stat sheet. Like I like to keep game notes and all the scoring plays, and you know, it all really started at 5-2 with the Canucks. If they get out of that second period, it might be a different outcome. But we talked about the penalty issues. Zuccarello scores off Ian Cole, a bit of a bounce that you referenced, you know, with 33 seconds remaining in the second period. Minnesota scored a goal in each of, you know, the final minutes of the first and the second period. And sometimes those can be massive momentum swings. The Canucks bounced back from the late first period goal and reestablished control and got up 4-1, and then Boldy scored, and then Miller caps his hat trick, makes it a 5-2 game, and you know, everything seemed to be going the Canucks' way. Their best players had stepped up. They had faced a little bit of criticism, or just the two defensemen scored the other night against Winnipeg, and so for JT to get a hat trick, his first of the year, get to 27 goals, Elias Pettersson, the release on his goal, like that looked like, you know, a guy that meant business. And so, again, there was so much to like from the Vancouver Canucks through 39 and a half minutes of this hockey game, but it is a 60-minute game. And I guess I wanted to believe that this group, all the success that they had, the veteran presence, that they were beyond this. And so there is a part of me that's surprised. And I know they're not a perfect team, and we've seen some cracks along the way, and playing with leads, you know, they were great before Christmas, but we've seen it a few too many times now where playing in the third period with a lead, they just haven't had that look of invincibility. You do wonder about the lingering effects of this, that you can try and shake it off, but other teams are going to say, like, hey, we saw Minnesota lean on this hockey club and pump them for 7 in the third period. Like, we're not out of this. So you hope that this doesn't have a lasting impact on the Vancouver Canucks. They're going to have to find a way to shake it off against one of the best teams in the NHL in Colorado. So we'll find out a little bit more about this team. You know, they're approaching the 60-game mark. You'd like to think that we have a pretty good read on who this group of Vancouver Canucks are. But boy, like, now they have to, they got to suck it up. They got to try and put this behind them, and that's not going to be easy going into to Ball Arena in Denver on Tuesday night.
No, absolutely not. And look, I think that it's another one of those measuring stick games. If you think you are who you really think you are, you go up against Colorado Avalanche team on the second of back-to-backs and you get blown out in the third period, you got to see what you're made of here. You know, you're going to get your starting goalie probably back into the lineup here, you know, against the Colorado Avalanche, and you're going to have a bad taste in your mouth if you're members of that Vancouver Canucks team, because that was ugly. That was an ugly third period. And look, I just think that there's so much in that game to like early. You know, they're playing well. You mentioned the guys coming off this night. JT Miller, the hat trick there, the Elias Pettersson, the all Swedes combining for that goal, the kind of the passing there, the release on the shot. And Ian Cole, for goodness sake, scored a goal. Like, you know, things were really good. And it's the way that they fell off, and it's just the pushback was kind of there, but not really. You know, when they make it a one-goal game, I go, okay, maybe there's a little bit of hope. And then Brodin, obviously, from a mile away, you knew that was one of the things, just the way that the afternoon was going. But yeah, we can talk about the officiating and things like that and some of the phantom calls and what happened. But at the same time, if you're putting yourself in a position for the referees to make some of these calls, then that's another issue in itself as well. Like, don't put yourself in an issue where the referee, if you see the referees are calling things a certain way in the game, you maybe have to change your game a little bit because it is going against you.
And for those people that want to pin this on the officials, like same thing the other night against Winnipeg. Like, it was a 2-2 game going to the third period. Mm-hmm. The Canucks see themselves as contenders. You put all that garbage behind you, you start fresh. The Canucks had the only power play of the third period the other night against the Jets. They didn't cash in, and then Winnipeg scored the two goals they needed to pull away. Keep in mind, too, here, like, if we're just being honest and we try to break this down from every conceivable angle on these post-game pods, like, Tyler Myers completely gets away with a pick on the first goal, the Ian Cole goal. Like, if that goes against the Canucks, people are screaming. And Tyler Myers stands his ground, basically looked like a rolling pick in basketball, and it created space for Ian Cole on that right side. So it does cut both ways. You may not like the officiating, but I do think the Canucks got a bit of a break there. And, you know, or if you listed off all the things that were going the Canucks' way, from Miller to Pettersson, the Swedish line, a power play goal, too. Yeah. Like, you know, they had gone 0 for 19. That rut got to 20. The first power play of the night did not look good. They were completely discombobulated again. But JT Miller picks the, you know, inside of the post. Brock Besser standing his ground in front of the net. There were things to like there on the power play, but that gets so lost in the shuffle on a day like this one, where the story is Minnesota going 4-for-6 with the man advantage and the Canucks just completely crumbling like we haven't seen, certainly at any point this year. New Jersey scored 6 on them, and that felt like a lot back in early December, but double digits, my goodness. So, we know that they go to Denver, and we'll see where things go from here for the Vancouver Canucks. There was a little glimmer of hope, I suppose, or a silver lining. Didn't look good for Connor Garland when he blocked that Joel Eriksson X shot late in the second period. He was in some real distress, and so I kind of thought his night would be done, and then there would be questions about whether he'd be able to go tomorrow in Colorado, but it was good to see him back out there at the very least. Of course, they only have the one extra healthy forward on this road trip, and that's Archdeve Baines, and maybe the door is open. We'll have to see, if Garland can't go or if Rick Tocchet. And I'm curious to see about this. Like, there's two ways Rick Tocchet can go here. Putting Archdeve Baines in, that's a great opportunity for him if it happens. It's not really message sending, I don't think, because he probably would go in on a fourth line kind of role. But Tocchet can come right back with the same lineup aside from the goaltending switch and say, you guys, I'm giving you an opportunity to clean up your own mess here. Or, he's limited. He's got Archdeve Baines. He's got Mark Friedman. He can make a couple of lineup changes if he figures that somehow that's going to help the hockey club. But again, we're talking about going into Colorado against the Avalanche, who barely lose at home. They're 21-5 on home ice, the best home ice record. So I will be curious to see if there are any coaching decisions outside of the goaltender, or if he just turns to the same players and sort of appeals to their professional pride and says, get back out there and just make it right. Do a whole lot better than you did over the final 21 minutes of this game in Minnesota.
No, absolutely. And I think that Rick's played, and he's probably played in some games where his teams weren't good either. He's played on had a lot of success in his career, but he's also been there. So he probably knows what some of those guys are thinking. But if we know Rick Tocchet, as well as what we've seen in the media and what he tends to put out sometimes, he's not going to be a happy man in that room for the way that third period was. I bet you the message is stern. I bet you it's clear. I bet you they get on that plane, they're looking at film, and they're probably the best thing for it to happen for this hockey team is that they don't have any time to think about this game. They're right back at it, and you get your goalie back. So there's some positive there. But Jeff, I want to ask you, like, you look at this team right now, and you look at the way that this game was, I don't want to say maybe handled, but the way that they played when things started to go wrong. What was the most concerning part for you?
Just that this is a veteran group. Like, it was pointed out on the broadcast, the Canucks don't have any rookies in their lineup. And they've had 8 games from rookies all season long, from Linus Karlsson, Akito Hirose, who was in the opening night lineup, and Cole McWard got in his game. This is a veteran group. And maybe they don't have a ton of rings to show for it. Ian Cole certainly has the championship pedigree. But with this coaching staff and a veteran group, composure. Again, adversity is going to be thrown at you in different ways. You had a 5-2 lead. Like, the 5-3 goal should have been a bit of a wake-up call that, all right, like, now we have to buckle down, but we still have a 2-goal lead to work with to start the third period, even though you're on the penalty kill. I mean, at that point, Minnesota had just scored the 1 power play goal. So it wasn't like they had been buzzing on the power play. It wasn't like the Canucks were under siege when they were shorthanded, but Minnesota flipped a switch that you just don't see very often, and they couldn't miss in that third period. And so I guess for me, it's composure, because I start to look at this team now. I mean, 2 months away from the playoffs, everything the Canucks do is viewed through a bit of a playoff prism. And for me, like, you see momentum swings. You're going to have to go into hostile buildings, and other teams are going to score a couple on you. And you have to be able to weather storms better than the Canucks certainly did in the third period. Like, they did I thought Minnesota had a great start to the hockey game the first couple of shifts. I thought they threw a bunch of pucks at the net, got traffic to the front of the net. And, you know, I mean, it feels like a lifetime ago now that the Canucks scored on their first shot and then actually scored on their second shot as well. I mean, the shots were 8-2 for Minnesota, and the Canucks were up 2-0. So it wasn't like the Canucks were dominant in the first period. It's just the PDO was working in their favor. They got a couple of bounces. We talked about the pick by Myers. You know, the Miller's first goal off the end boards comes right to him. I mean, great hand eye by him, but a fortunate bounce to be in the right spot. And again, they gave up the late goal in the first period. If they get out of the first up 2-0, I mean, there's still a ton of hockey to be played, but Minnesota, you know, on the board with some life, the crowd's into it. Now it's a 1-goal game. And then I like the way the Canucks extended. I mean, we talked about there were, like, they stacked those shifts. Like, Pia Suter had a great scoring chance. He was on the doorstep, didn't score. But moments later, that all Swede line got out there, they score, they make it 3-1, and then JT Miller on the power play, you know, 4-1. So the fact that this group wasn't able to play better with the lead, and I do think, like, we've seen this, you know, in Detroit, where they had a 3-1 lead after a good second period, but they end up giving up 3 unanswered goals, losing in overtime on the penalty shot there. You know, you go back to, and maybe I cut them a little bit of slack in Columbus at the tail end of that long road trip with the travel trouble that they had had. But, you know, that was the first time all year that they weren't able to make a third period lead stand up. And they did get a single point out of that game at Nationwide Arena. But, you know, we're starting to see this a little more and more. And maybe the record after two was a little inflated. I mean, it was so gaudy when it, what did it get to, like 28-0 or something?
Yeah, I think it was 20, yeah, about that.
But, you know, this is the first time that they lose outright when taking a lead to the third period. So it hasn't happened often, obviously, but we have seen third period leads get away from the Vancouver Canucks. And I think that's something that Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff are going to have to try to snap this group back to attention, the staples, the non-negotiables, whatever. You know, they're more important than ever in the third period when you've got a lead. Like, don't wait till Minnesota ties it up to think, uh-oh, like, now we got a game on our hands. When Minnesota scored that late goal in the second to make it 5-3, to me, that's when some alarm bells should have been going off for the Vancouver Canucks, and yet it didn't feel like that was the case. So sort of, you know, to answer your question, I guess, again, I thought this team was a little bit past this, where composure in certain circumstances would be an issue, but we saw that they basically went into panic mode in the third period.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the biggest things, right? You just can't have that. And look, I know where this team is in the standings, and I know how good they've been all year, and I know we talk about it. Every game that they lose, they're allowed to lose hockey games, and they've padded enough stats, and they've done enough good things, and they have players playing at historic levels, both NHL and for the franchise. But when you lose the way you do, you mentioned veteran group, with the composure, not having the composure in the third period, these are hockey games you're not supposed to lose. And you can blame the officiating all you want, but you just can't lose it. Did Rick Tocchet, did Rick Tocchet call a timeout in the third period?
No.
Yeah. So that's another thing. I mean, look, maybe he just wanted his team could feel it out and things like that. But if you look at it, like, if you're the coach, Jeff, did you call a timeout at some point when you feel like, if you have that feel for the game and you think it's getting away from you?
I was surprised at that. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know a lot of coaches want to save it till the end in case it's a 1-goal game or whatever. I think there are times in a game where you've got to play that card. And Minnesota, certainly they did. We saw them call the timeout when they got their first five on, or their, the 5-on-3 late in the second period. And that was good coaching by John Hines. Rest your best players, you know, save them up and let them empty the tank over the final minute of the second period. And they got the one goal that sort of was the catalyst for them to breathe some life back into this comeback effort. So yeah, a little surprise. Yeah, you know, there's enough to go around. Like, we can harp on the goaltender, we can look at the players. They're all in it together. And so the coaches have to wear this as well. And I do think that there were certain buttons that Rick Tocchet and his coaching staff probably could have pushed a little bit more. You know, the other thing too is, and you know, you're not wrong, Irf, when you point out, like, they're 37-14-6. They remain in first place in the National Hockey League standings. Teams will creep a little closer. Boston won in a shootout, so the Bruins picked up points, and you know, Vegas in San Jose going to pick up points. So their teams will creep a little bit closer to them. I think the bigger issue here isn't their overall record. They have created a buffer, but if we're just being flat out honest, they have 5 wins in their last 10 games now. They're 5-3-2, but in just, did you leave the building with a win? You know, 5 wins, 5 losses in their last 10. And I think they believe that they're a much better team than 5 wins in a 10-game stretch. Now, we saw that back in November. Remember when they alternated wins and losses over a 10-game run? And we were like, all right, who are the real Canucks? How are they going to come? How are they going to come out of this? Well, they came out of it on this ridiculous run with like 2 regulation losses in 24 games. And that's put them in the position they are. But here they are now. They're facing good teams. This is a sneaky, tough road trip. 3-4 with the afternoon start into Denver. And then, you know, the third game in 4 nights is in Seattle, where the Kraken are desperate. They're trying to hang on to a playoff spot. They've been really good at home over the last couple of months. So that's not going to be easy as well. And that's why at 5-2, it looked like just do your business, get out of XL Energy Center with a victory, and take your chances in Colorado on Tuesday. And instead, they're leaving Minnesota with their tails between their legs. They're licking their wounds here, and they've got to bounce back now against the Colorado Avalanche. So, second time this season that they've had a 10-game stretch where, you know, 5 wins and 5 losses. It's not the end of the world, but, you know, if you don't get a result in Colorado, then you go into Seattle, and all of a sudden there's a little pressure there. If you don't get a result in Colorado, that's 3 straight losses. That's something that hasn't happened to this hockey club all season long. And it's one of the reasons they are where they are in the standings as well, is because they haven't allowed losing streaks to creep in. And so I think it would have been foolish to think they'd go the entire season without losing 3 in a row at some point. And they haven't yet. I'll give them every opportunity in Colorado, but that's sort of, you know, just to frame that game against the Avalanche, that's one of the storylines there, is that the Canucks haven't dropped 3 straight at any point this season. And now, coming off this, how do they respond?
Yeah, well, I think that that's the biggest thing, right? And you're going to get the automatic bump with Demko probably being back in the net for that one. I mean, let's be honest, he likely is the starter, barring anything crazy happening between now and the time puck drops. But it's the rest of the team. It's how do you mentally prepare for that game after going through this? You're lucky you don't have a day off. You're lucky that there's really probably not going to be a morning skate. You're not going to really have to do much or any media in the morning. There's not going to be, not that many local media will probably be there to be talking about it as well. So you get to go in and play the game. And I think that that's an important thing for this group with the way things ended in that game. I mean, also, the late goal to end of the first period and a late goal to end of the second period there as well in this hockey game. That's just another thing to look at for this group. But all in all, like, they lost. I don't think that a team this good should be losing games like that. We've definitely talked about it. There's enough blame to go around everywhere, from the officiating to the penalty kill to the coaching to, you know, maybe it just being one of those hockey games. But unfortunately, if you're the best team in the National Hockey League and you lose the way that you do, you're going to get every team's Stanley Cup final. You're going to have a target on your back. That's just the way it is. And it's going to be like that from here until the end of the season.
Yeah, and we talk about sort of this week ahead of the Canucks. So this one's off the board, Colorado, Seattle, and of course, oh yeah, Boston on Saturday. And I know the Bruins have had some struggles. I mentioned they beat Dallas in a shootout, but they got to play badly, gave up 45 or 46 shots. So maybe they're not at their best, but it's the Canucks. It's Boston. You know the stakes and certainly the expectations of the fan base for that one. And given what happened in Boston 10 days ago, where the Canucks got blanked in one of their poorest performances up until this one against the Minnesota Wild. So storylines abound every night out for this hockey club that now has to find a way to sort of harness it back in, eliminate the mistakes, play with a little more composure, Leisure ultimately get it right, because they had a chance against Winnipeg, 2-2 into the third. That was a game that was there for the taking, and here with a 5-2 lead, and they flushed that. So lots still ahead here on this episode of Rinkwide. We're just getting started. Barely feel like we scratched the surface with all the storylines in this one, but we'll find some stats that stand out. Certainly there were enough numbers from a hockey game like this one. Listener feedback, looking forward to hearing what you have to say and your takeaways from a 10-7 loss for the Canucks in Minnesota. It's Jeff and it's Irv with you. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. Vancouver Canucks fall 10-7 to the Minnesota Wild at XL Energy Center. Mini takes the season series, two wins in the three games. Canucks had a 2-0 shutout win way back. A shutout? Hard to even utter that word on a day when they give up 10, but they did blank Minnesota 2-0 back on the 7th of December. Jeff and Irv with you here, Rinkwide Vancouver. Going to hear from Rick Tocchet, and we're going to let you hear him in his entirety. He talked for about 90 seconds after this hockey game. All post-game audio on Rinkwide Vancouver is a presentation of Mr. Lube, 100% Canadian, pioneers of the no-appointment oil change, and now providing tire service and sales as well, and no appointment needed there. 16 locations in the Lower Mainland for one near you. Go to MrLube.com. Irv, we'll play the coach and then we'll come back. We'll break it all down. But as you can imagine, none too pleased with the penalties, the discipline, and a couple of other areas of this hockey game. This is Rick Tocchet speaking to the reporters in Minnesota after the 10-7 loss.
Well, you got to learn how to play under pressure. You know, we gave him, four or five on threes. Give him a goal at the end of the first, and then we take a penalty after the second. So these are lessons that we have to learn how to play under pressure. Stick penalties. Our five-on-play was good. We had a lot of chances. I thought we played 5-on-5. Obviously, the other parts of our game wasn't good.
Did you talk to them specifically about discipline after the game?
That and playing under pressure.
And JT, you mentioned as well the 5-on-5 play. Was there anything else that you take away? He also talked about being excited to turn around and play again right away.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we got 20-something games. You're anytime you play this game, you want to be excited to play. You know, we'll be ready to play tomorrow and go from there.
You mentioned the penalty is the second straight game. That penalty trouble was kind of there. Where's the level of concern?
It's probably four games. Yeah. Okay. It's getting, it's actually stupid stick penalties. You know, you can't do it. And we got to learn. And when you play under pressure, you cannot do those things.
Solace in the first 40 minutes of the game, though, and then kind of coming back toward the end.
Well, I mean, take away the 5-on-4 or whatever, 5-on-3s, take away the stupid stick penalties, giving up the goal, the end of the first, the breakaway and stuff like that. The 5-on-5 play was good. I mean, we had a lot of possession time, we had a lot of chances.
What can you take from the way that you guys closed out the game and tried to battle back there?
I mean, it's good, but it's not good enough. Just the whole overall. I look at the whole overall game.
Well, he sounded a lot like we did in that opening segment. You know, we just talked about, stupid stick penalties. You know, he wasn't giving his players an out at all. And we've heard this from him before. I mean, he's got that thing about meeting pressure with pressure. That's where he seemed, I think, the most disappointed in his group. Like, forget the fact that, yes, Minnesota scored on the power play. It was that his team just couldn't deal with the pressure. And like we said, I think we both felt that this team had come so far this year that they were sort of past that.
Yeah. And look, I think that we mentioned as well is when they alternated those wins and losses, they went one game. We kind of were confusing. You alluded to it in the show that who are the real Canucks? And then you mentioned you get past it and you think that they can overcome these things. But now it's just compounding mistakes and it's things that happen. And it's, Is it? This is one game, and I don't want to question this team's leadership group, but talking not calling a timeout, don't really know if I like that. And then are you having guys like, you know, when before a faceoff, is someone saying something? Is it Quinn Hughes? Is it JT? Is it Elias Pettersson just before a draw, you know, when they talk to each other and things like that? It's one of those things, but I mean, Tocchet probably doesn't want a $25,000 fine by the NHL, right? So I think that he's smart enough to not, you know, criticize the officiating, but he's also smart enough to know what his team didn't do right in that hockey game. And there was a lot of errors and there's a lot of mental errors to finish that hockey game as well.
Yeah, I mean, he uttered it twice, stupid stick penalties. I mean, Connor Garland gets called for high-sticking 4 minutes into the game. That one didn't cost them. Teddy Bluger, when they're already down a man, that's a high-sticking penalty as well. But really, Elias Pettersson sort of tackled for his hooking penalty, and you could have called a bunch of different things. That was the other thing. We really haven't talked about that. Like, and it kind of was just par for the course on this afternoon. Like, how many crazy scrambles were there at both ends of the ice? But there were a couple of sequences. Like, I know the Canucks were pissed off on, and I've lost track of which goal it was, but that scramble, I think it was Kaprizov's.
Kaprizov's goal, yeah.
And, like, Ian Cole is down, but, I mean, the referee must have felt that he could see the puck there because they allowed play to continue. And I always fear, like, guys are going to just get, like, hatchet job to death and that, you know, players are sticking other guys looking for that puck. So, I mean, I think the Canucks felt that there could have been a whistle, but you got to play until the whistle, and whistle didn't happen there. And Kaprizov ultimately at the side of the net, able to fire at home. So, but I just look when I hear talk about stupid stick penalties, you know, like Zadorov gets called for holding, Pettersson gets called for hooking, and we talked about JT Miller up over the glass. I mean, is that a stick penalty? Not really. So, you know, maybe it's just frustration on the coach, and maybe he thought there were more stick penalties in there. Whatever the case, like, that's the other thing. Like, there were so many overlapping penalties, but ultimately Minnesota only had 6 power plays. Like, it felt like they had 15. They had 6, they scored on 4 of them, and they win it by a score of 10-7. So some frustration for the coach, obviously, and we'll see how they pick up the pieces and move on. I know that we will pick up and move on here into the 3-star selection again. Post-game audio brought to you by Mr. Lube. This is a pretty easy afternoon. I think it was just a question of in which order the 3 stars in the building, Joel Eriksson Ek, Kirill Kaprizov, and JT Miller. Hard to argue with that. The two Wild players both had 6-point nights, and JT Miller with his 4-pointer. So I'm fine with that. I think that's a pretty good order. And as we've mentioned, like, it does sort of feel like JT Miller, one of his most dominant performances of the season, is going to be an afterthought, which is unfortunate for him. His first hat trick, 6th hat trick of the season by Vancouver Canuck players. Brock's got 3 of them. Pia Suter had one. PD had one against Nashville way back at the start of the year. And then JT Miller in this one, the 3rd hat trick of his National Hockey League career. But do we agree with that? Go with the two Wild guys and their 6-point afternoons as the first 2 stars, and then JT Miller?
Yeah, I think you have to, right? I mean, yeah. Goal scorers get paid. Guys that put up points get paid. They're the one that people pay a lot of money to go and see. You're not giving either goalie or any mess of that defenseman, any of the defensemen there are stars. So you got to go with those guys for sure.
And how about that? Marc-Andre Fleury ends up getting the win, 555th career victory, where he probably thought I was just going in to mop up and it wasn't Philip Gustafson's afternoon. So they give him the final 20 minutes. Wasn't terribly busy. Didn't see a lot of pucks. Did give up a couple of goals as it turned out, but he had the comfort level. The Canucks unable to stop the Minnesota Wild. So Marc-Andre Fleury gets the win. Minnesota gets the victory. 10-7, the final score. We've got lots still ahead here. We'll get to the stat that stands out. In fact, a couple of them. We'll get to listener feedback to our channels at Rinkwide Van and a thought or two on the challenge facing the Vancouver Canucks. A short memory here as they jump on their plate and head for Denver and take on the Colorado Avalanche on Tuesday night. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. Trying to make sense of a 10-7 loss for the Vancouver Canucks in Minnesota. We'll get some listener feedback here in a sec. But Irf, as you can imagine, with a game that had 17 goals and the drama of this one, lots of choices for the stat that stands out. I guess for me, 3 hat tricks. I'd have to go back and look at the last time there were 3 hat tricks in a National Hockey League game. But beyond that, there were 5 guys that had 4-point afternoons in this hockey game. There were 2 guys that had 6 points. JT Miller had his hat trick and 4 points. A couple of other Minnesota Wild, Matt Boldy, Matt Zuccarello, they had 4-point afternoons as well. So you had 5 guys that had 4 points or more. I hope people had Canucks and Wild on their fantasy teams or in their hockey pools for this one.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, I think that there's that one, and also the Canucks haven't allowed 10 goals since forever either. I think it's the three hat tricks is crazy as well. The 3 hat tricks is actually so crazy that you almost forget about JT Miller's because of the way that the game ended.
Like, no, you're right.
Right?
The power move on Bogosian and just a beautiful, like, JT was dialed in with the shots in this hockey game, the power play goal off the post and in, and then to, you know, the drive wide and to be able to get the stick around Bogosian to get that shot off. And then he does pick up an assist on, I think it's his Zadorov goal as well. So 4 points for JT Miller. You know, and look, Brock scores at the end. That's kind of a complete afterthought. Good for him. I hope that it gets the good vibes going again. Just there hasn't been enough goals off the stick of Brock Besser. But with Miller scoring three times in this hockey game and Petey scoring as well, you know, at one point, Pettersson crept within one of Besser for the team lead. So Brock extends his lead. Besser has 31, Pettersson's got 29, and JT Miller's got 27. With the amount of hockey that's left to be played, like, there is an absolute goal-scoring derby now for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and look, I think that's... Brock probably doesn't win that derby. We mentioned all the time about Brock Besser and him scoring in bunches, so maybe he's got, you know, five or six games in a row where he gets one, two, and maybe three, but... You know, JT Miller scores pretty consistently, and then Elias Pettersson, obviously, he's probably not going to go three or four games without a goal. So the goal-scoring derby is going to be interesting to talk about here. But they're going to get to a point, like, they can have three goal scorers, 30, 35 goals apiece. That could be a wild stat as well near the end of the season, Jeff.
And I think I saw when JT Miller scored his first of the night or afternoon, it gave him 25, and they were the first team in the NHL to have three 25 goal scorers. So you figure that 330 goal scorers for sure. And then, yeah, is it 35? Are they all going to take a run at 40? Like, even with his slowdown here, Brock is still on pace for somewhere in the low 40s. And so he creeps one closer, obviously, getting to 31. You know, and Pia Suter had three assists as well. He had kind of been quiet since the All-Star break. And that's the other thing. Like, this wasn't like Kaprizov and Joel Eriksson Ek, you know, completely out-dueled the Canucks' best players. Like, the Canucks' best players were all over the score sheet, and I was thinking as I was putting my notes together for the show, I'm like, all right, like, these guys have been taking a little bit of heat since the All-Star break, you know, but they rose to the occasion after the loss to Winnipeg, and they did. But unfortunately, there were other areas of the game that were woefully inept, and penalty kill was the top of the list, and we've talked about that an awful lot. People have heard from us here on this episode. Let's see what the people had to say about this 10-7 loss in Minnesota as we go to our social feedback channels at Rinkwide Van. And again, a lot of people harping on the officiating, and I get it. The Canucks lost, people are upset and they're frustrated, but... I think you're a little misguided here when you're giving up four. And I know that there were the 5-on-3 goals. I get that. But I'm just surprised at the amount of vitriol directed at the officiating as opposed to the guys that were supposed to be out there killing penalties. Michael says refs after Myers called them out last game. And he's got a picture of Michael Jordan wearing an NHL referee jersey. And it says, and I took them personally. I want to believe that it's not the case. And yet, I can't sit here and tell you that for certain that the officials don't talk or that they don't pay attention to what's going on and being said about them. Were you at all surprised that Myers wasn't dinged, even fined by the league for, you know, like, it wasn't outlandish, but anytime you say you're playing two teams as opposed to one, you're calling out the officials and the league's pretty sensitive. I was a little surprised that Tyler Myers didn't get a phone call from the National Hockey League.
Well, the one good thing for Tyler Myers is that the people that were probably making the decisions were fast asleep and worried about the outdoor games then. So I think that Tyler Myers got away with it. He might have known what was going on in his surroundings when he made those comments. But look, I think that the officiating, it wasn't 100%. I kind of agree with you, Jeff, that we can't sit here and say that we don't know if the officials talk or say, or, you know, there've been conspiracy theories about how the games have been managed and things like that and of that nature. But still, you're leading a hockey game by a certain amount of goals. You should be able to, if you are as good a team as everyone says you are and that you've shown to be all season, like you mentioned when we talked about this all show, you have to be able to hold your composure and win that hockey game.
The provocative one on Twitter says, Canucks aren't getting out of the first round of the playoffs. That's what I took away from this game. I think it's a little early to be making that sort of rash prediction, but I will say that, you know, if they end up playing Minnesota and the Wild are scratching and clawing and trying to hang in and be relevant in the playoff race, you know, Minnesota held them to, well, they beat them in a shootout 2-1 back in December, and then they beat them in the polar opposite, the other end of the spectrum in this one. But, you know, St. Louis is also right there in the battle for that wild card spot, and St. Louis beat the Canucks twice this year. So, you know, some of these teams that are a little lower in the standings, like there's so much focus on, oh, they've got to finish first in the West so that they avoid Vegas and Edmonton, and I get that line of thinking, but some of these other teams have given the Canucks all they can handle as well. Will says, I really don't understand why you pull the goalie at 9-7. Allowing a team to put a double-digit 10 spot on you is far more embarrassing than single digits. Really don't get it. Not like they were going to tie it. And you know what? I tend to agree with that. Like, the damage has been done, but don't compound the problems yourself. Like, you know, you haven't kept anything out of your net. Don't give them another freebie and people can say, hey, 10-7, 9-7, what's the difference? No, I think optically there is, and maybe psychologically as well. So again, I didn't agree with some of the decisions that Rick Tocchet made in that third period, whether it was the lack of a timeout or pulling the goaltender again at 9-7. I guess maybe Tocchet's thinking, hey, so many goals going in, who's to say that somehow they don't get a couple? And you know what? When they made it, I lost track here, but when they made it 8-7, and they got the goalie out and they actually had a decent look. Wouldn't that have been something if they had tied the game at 8-all? But it wasn't to be. Canucks go down in flames. 10-7 is the final. Lorne says you can't win when you're killing 5-on-3s all game. Again, I don't think he's necessarily putting that on the officials. He's just making a statement that you're right. Like, tough enough to have to kill 5-on-4s, but when you compound that and take penalties when you're already a man short, it's a difficult way to live and a difficult way to win, and ultimately the Canucks didn't. Dan says, boys need to be more disciplined. The high sticks, interference, delay a game, and sportsmanlike, all of them unacceptable. And as I said earlier, I think aside from the Elias Lindholm penalty, which I didn't like, the other ones didn't really have an issue with. And so easiest way to kill penalties, Earth, is don't take them in the first place. Like, you're going to take penalties, I get that, but don't compile them, don't compound them, don't make matters worse for yourself. And Canucks didn't do a very good job of that one at XL Energy Center. Last word here to JCOG88 says, not even sure. Maybe the goalie needs to stop the puck. Maybe the refs need to chill. Maybe the Canucks need to not take so many penalties. So yeah, I mean, all of those factors added up. Bottom line, the Canucks weren't good enough and weren't good enough the other night against the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, they were decent 5-on-5 against the Jets, but they gave up the two power play goals there. And so again, for a team that's had some success on the penalty kill since Christmas, by my math, they have given up 6 power play goals in their last 10 times shorthanded. That is a 40% kill rate. That's not getting it done. And this little stretch here, these last couple of games, feels just way too much like the last couple of seasons.
Yeah. And I just think that when you look at it, and like we've talked about, you know, if you really believe in yourself, and you know, their head coach was even one of the guys that was basically saying he wasn't blaming the officiating. You know, he was basically said that they're the ones that took stupid penalties. So if your head coach is saying that, you know, you obviously know that there was something beyond than just the officiating that he was upset about. But whatever. The Canucks, obviously, Jeff, and it's a holiday too. Everyone was on this one. It was an early game, the family day. No one was happy. It was one of those games. But they get back at it. And I think that that's the one good thing that they have for this team, is they can wipe this one away and get right back at it against Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, and just as we wrap things up here, a couple of thoughts on the Avs. We mentioned their home ice record, 21-5. They've won 11 of their last 12 at home. They beat Arizona 4-3 on Sunday. Nathan MacKinnon leads the Avalanche, second in the NHL, 91 points through 56 games. He's fifth in the league in goals with 33 and tied for the league lead in assists with 58. And it's not just him. I mean, Mikko Rantanen's got 29 goals. Cale Makar's got 60 points. And the Avs are the highest scoring team in the league this year, at least as we record this, or a game's going on around the National Hockey League. But you've just come off a game where you've given up 10, and now you're facing the team that scored more than any other team in the National Hockey League. So the challenges are pretty obvious. Colorado beat the Canucks 5-2 back in November. This is just their second meeting of the season, and Colorado will be in Vancouver once this year, and that'll be on March 13th as part of that long 9-game homestand next month. So we shall see, but they didn't measure up. They played Colorado hard for 40 minutes, and the Avs pulled away in the third period when they met back in November, and certainly played Minnesota hard for two periods, and let things get away in the third period in this one. 10-7. I would imagine that there'll be some sleepless people in and around the Canuck organization and probably some Canuck fans as well. Shake it off, get out there, enjoy some fresh air. The beauty of hockey is that they will turn around and they'll do it all again on Tuesday night, and that's when we'll be back with our next episode of Rink-Wide Vancouver. For Irfan Gafar, this is Jeff Patterson. Again, thanks so much for listening. The final score, the Minnesota Wild 10. The Vancouver Canucks 7. You've been listening to Rink-Wide Vancouver.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.